Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 322. I am Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have on the show for the second time, actually, if you got to check in on that awesome little in-person recording that I did at the Long Beach Perform Better Summit. But that's Coach Steve-O, Steven Ledbetter. Steve-O, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, man?
Doing great. This is going to be a really cool episode, and it's some of the, like we talked in... Wow, it was like almost 5 months ago now.
It's August. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it was about 5 months ago now. So we got to sit down and chat for a little bit in Long Beach about what you do. But for people that, you know, may have missed that episode, or if they're tuning in just for the first time, why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, what you do and like how you started getting involved with, you know, friend of the show, Dan John, and kind of like what you're doing now.
Cool. My trajectory has been a non-linear one, but I think that's true of a lot of people in this industry. I got started coaching, I think it's 8 years ago now, and personal trainer, strength coach, all that usual stuff. And when I started working with more clients one-on-one, I kept hearing this thing over and over and over again. That was perfectly encapsulated by an 80-year-old client that I had who told me that she knew what to do. She just couldn't make herself do it. And I realized quite suddenly that the only things I knew how to do were to tell people to do stuff, and that I needed a different toolkit. So I went back to school for health psychology, got a master's in that. And right around that same time, 2011, met the super awesome rock star that is Dan John at Mike Boyle's in, is it Wooster? Is
that where it was? I keep forgetting. Yeah, that was in Woburn, Mass. You were at our Woburn seminar back in 2000, I guess it was 2011.
Yeah, and that was the day, the two fateful things happened that day. I met Kevin Larrabee for the first time. And I also met, Dan John, went up to him after he said in his talk, which blew me away, that he lived in San Francisco. I thought he lived in Utah. He said he lived in San Francisco. He just moved back there. And I went up to him at the end of his talk, put my hand out and said, "Dan, I live in San Francisco too." And he tells it differently. He says that I scared the living crap out of him, which is a unique interpretation, considering that he outweighs me by over 100 pounds. But we hit it off, and I started, I guess you'd call it interning, but that gives way more structure to anything that Dan John does. It's more of a friendship, mentorship relationship that's been going on for 4 years now and has changed the course of my career and my life, and I couldn't thank him enough for it.
Well, yeah, I mean that we talked a little bit about that on the last time that you were on, and from there you went on to do some really cool stuff. I know you're also working out of, I don't know if you're still there, but working out of Kelly Starrett's place in I believe in San Francisco as well.
Yeah, I did an internship there. I guess it's going on 2 years now, for my graduate degree. Did a sports psychology internship there, and Kelly asked me to stay on as a nutrition and sports psychology consultant for San Francisco CrossFit, and I've been doing that for 2 years now. But the bulk of my work was inspired by my time in graduate school. And that's working with large groups of people, mostly online, to change their health behaviors one habit at a time. Mm-hmm. That's what I am super passionate about, making communities of consistency, and that's what pays the rent.
Yeah, and I think that's been a little bit of a common trend here on the show in the last maybe 12 to 18 months, and I'm going to sound a little bit like a broken record when I say, you know, I think we have a lot of the answers that we need to get the results that we want in terms of sets and reps, you know, good mm-hmm. exercises, obviously focusing more on multi-joint exercises, movement patterns, and a little bit evolving a lot in that on that side of things. But still, for a lot of people out there, it seems to be just the adherence, being able to stick with a program, being able to reach their goals, making sure that they're not making too big a changes when they want to reach those goals. So I think that's what we're going to be talking a lot about today, because this is the new year. People have a lot of New Year's resolutions, and even if you don't, you're just one of those people out there that has problems finishing, like getting to the finish line with a lot of this stuff. I think this is going to be really good. And selfishly, this is some of the stuff that I'm most interested in today. I don't need to really hear someone say, yeah, do 3 sets of 8, superset that with 3 sets of 12, and then, maybe put in some filler. Yeah, I got that part. I need to understand what we should be doing in terms of making sure that our clients and even ourselves are being able to follow that stuff. So let's start with that, because one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, does the mindset change when, say, if it's someone who's listening and they want to focus on a goal, they need to focus on like a behavior change or even just motivation. How is that different than you as a trainer helping someone else? Does that make sense? Like between first person and third person, like when you're needing to help yourself versus helping others, is the advice that you're going to give today, does that differentiate between the two?
I mean, mainly in form. I mean, that's but the ideas, like the basic model's the same. When you're working with someone, you have the luxury of an object. You can look at their behavior and see what they're doing, and you have may have a better handle on just an objective view. And that's one of the luxuries we have as coaches, is when just to take a deadlift example, if someone says, oh yeah, I deadlift all the time, and then you say, well, how much do you deadlift? 135. You have the benefit of going, I don't think you know what deadlifting all the time means. Like, I think your definition's off a little bit. And I think the same is true with behavior change. There's a great quote from Wittgenstein that I'm going to completely butcher, that there's no one easier to fool than yourself. And that's kind of what I see most when I'm working with people. Let's call it people who have got a very clear goal and think they know what they want. A lot of the times they have point B pretty clear in their head, but they don't know what point A is. They don't really know where they're at, to steal from Dan John's intervention. And working when you're by yourself, learning the self-awareness is probably the most valuable use of your time when you're trying to form health habits. When you've got the benefit of working with someone else, then most of that time can be spent on planning and experimenting. But when you're by yourself, this those self-awareness dollars are the biggest bang for your buck.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. It's good to put that in context for people before we move forward, because I know a lot of the times we give like general advice, and for a lot of people, especially in this profession, it's a lot easier for us to help others than to help ourselves sometimes. So that might be the case even if you're just like a weekend warrior, like just someone that's really into the fitness side of things, whether you're, a trainer, or whether you just like to hit up the gym, 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. So, let's start off by just talking about some of the big rocks. So, for coaches out there, let's talk about coaches specifically. What do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that they're making when it comes to motivating and helping their clients? What do you see people doing wrong, and I guess what should they be doing instead?
I think the biggest mistake that I see coaches making when they start thinking about this whole crazy idea called behavior change is they still think like, like we see coaches on TV. I was having this conversation once with Dan, that those locker room speeches that you see in movies and stuff, yeah, those don't happen in real life. Like, if you talk to a real professional athlete, they don't need pumping up. They usually need help, you know, focusing, prioritizing, and calming down. And so we have this, we already are starting out with this whole idea of like let's motivate my client on the wrong foot, because we've been sold a bill of goods. And that's this mistaken idea that we can motivate anyone. Ed Deasy, who's the founder of self-determination theory, which is, I think without a doubt, the best understanding we have for a model we have for understanding motivation, says that you can't motivate anyone. You can only create the conditions in which people feel safe to motivate themselves. The point, if you're working with someone, you're a coach, your client can always quit. They can always walk away. Like, that's always in the background. So the mistake that I see coaches make is that they dictate behaviors to clients and then expect adherence. When I think the best way to think of it is how the doctors think about health behavior is called concordance, which is something means that you work with the client. You work with them to determine the path, and then they're much more likely to actually stick to it. So instead of saying you should write, as an example, you should write down what you eat. You're going to keep a food journal. Great. That's a very useful habit. It's very good for building self-awareness in what and why you eat. However, the most effective way I know to do that is to elicit it from the client. To say, how do you feel about writing down what you eat? And actually get them involved in the process by asking them questions. And let them determine how they're going to record what they eat. Don't tell them to use MyFitnessPal. Ask them if they've ever heard of MyFitnessPal. They might not like it. And then you're working uphill. You're fighting two battles. You're trying to get them to write down what they eat and learn a new software application. A lot of my clients, when I say, we're going to work on the habit of recording what you eat, I might be working with 120 people and we'll have 50 different ways to do it. Everyone's going to take a slightly different tack. So dictating to your clients, telling them what to do, is just not as effective as asking them what they want to do and starting eliciting it and getting concordance instead of adherence.
All right, so this is pretty cool. So it's almost like you're trying to not convince them, but you're trying to have someone else make the decision for themselves. Is that like empowering them to give them a little bit more confidence or feel like, you know, they have more control over something?
Exactly. According to self-determination theory, the three basic psychological needs that people seek and when they're motivating themselves are autonomy, competence, and belonging. Autonomy is the most important. Autonomy is that that sense that you're in the driver's seat. Even if you're using a map that someone else gave you, you're the one with your hand on the wheel. And eliciting that sense of autonomy is probably the most important tool we have as coaches in our toolkit. And it's very easy to do. It can be as simple as letting them choose the way they want to write down what they eat. My favorite example of how easy this can be from Nick Winkelman is let them choose whether to use a dumbbell or a kettlebell that day. Just give them some choice in the matter. Let them feel like they're a part of the process.
All right, cool. So for people out there, I know we're only a couple minutes into the episode, but this might be a great time to bring up, you know, how important and how vital the support is from the audience to support the show, to help make sure that new episodes are coming out every single week. I've not missed a week since the Patreon thing has started.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Like, you know, people have, you know, really stepped up. We had some people drop off over the holidays. This is totally expected. You know, things get a little bit tighter financially. So I'm going to try this. Have you guys out there heard of supporting the FitCast through patreon.com? Do you think that is a good thing to do? I don't know, am I doing this right, Steve-O? So the great way the great thing that you can do is, like, just for a dollar an episode, you can jump on patreon.com, and that is patreon.com/thefitcast. And starting at just like a dollar per episode, you can even cap it on a per month basis. You know, you can help support the show to make sure that I can set aside the time to do these episodes every single week for you. And now Patreon people actually get a dedicated RSS feed, so you get those episodes first, a week early. Plus, you can still put that in your iPhone or your iTunes feed or whatever podcast subscription thing that you're using to make sure that you're still getting those episodes early and delivered right to you, so you don't have to, like, download the MP3 directly, anything like that. So now it is super convenient, and I want to thank a couple of people. I want to thank Jim Ward, who is supporting the show at $10 per episode. Jim is going huge, huge supporter of the show. Thank you so much, Jim Ward. And also Dave Ballantyne, who is also doing $10 per episode. So you don't have to do that. You don't have to go $10. Like, literally, if you think about a cup of coffee is about $4. If you set aside that $4 for the FitCast every single month, you're going to make sure that you get four great episodes. And as my... if you could see my travel schedule for the next couple months, it is terrible. So this is going to make sure that I can set aside that time, maybe sleep a little less, and get great people on the show to talk to you and deliver it every single week. So I just want to ask you, you know, is the FitCast worth a dollar per week, a dollar per episode to get an hour of content? So patreon.com/thefitcast. And if that doesn't work for you, you can also click on a PayPal tab on the fitcast.com. And if you donate $50 or more per year, you get those same benefits as well. I'll send you the RSS feed so you can just get that stuff directly 1 week early and without any pre-roll ads or anything like that. So that was a little bit longer than I wanted to, but that stuff is important. We did have, you know, about a $20 drop off over the holiday break. So hopefully we have some people step up and take their place. Thank you so much for everyone out there that is supporting the show. So let's get back to it, Steve-O. I know that was a little bit of an early ad, but you know, now that we can start kind of putting this stuff together, we have some groundwork for this. So, there's not just people out there that are coaches that are working with people. Like I said, we have a lot of people that just are really into this stuff. So maybe you could give us an example of maybe mistakes that people are making when they're just trying to help set their own goals. Is this something that people should go alone with, you know, alone at, or should you elicit some help from a friend or from a professional to make sure that you have some, I don't know if you would call it social support going forward?
I mean, I think you can't call it social support, and I would. I think that is one of the biggest mistakes that people make is not it is trying to go it alone. I'm biased, A, because I work in groups, but B, because I am wholly convinced by both the scientific literature and the history of every successful human behavior change intervention that behavior change happens in groups.
So maybe we can even pause for a second and let's, I didn't even think of that. Like, maybe we can also talk about, you know, how to create your own group. How do you go about finding people to join in, you know, with you on your goal setting or your social support group, I guess.
The easiest way, to do that is to ask. I mean, if you've, and I tend to say this a lot, but the easiest way is to use your words and ask people. But that can be a big thing for people. And it's also important to know finding the right people to ask. If you haven't read Teddy Roosevelt's Dare Greatly speech, let me summarize it for you. It's really important to find the people who are in the arena, to find the people who are going through the same struggle that you are and who are dealing with the same day-to-day stuff. Now, that can be as easy as finding an online community for those who are tech savvy, but it can also mean a friend, a partner, or a professional. And this doesn't have to be, you know, a bromance. You don't need to see them every single day, but it's just having that little bit extra, knowing that there's someone who's going to ask you, "Hey, how'd that workout go today?" Knowing that there's someone who you can ask the same question of, And just the more hands, the lighter the work. I see it over and over and over again. The bigger the groups that I work with, the more success we have. And I really think that if you're going to get started on a health and fitness journey, or even get over a plateau that you might be on, shaking up the people that you're talking to and working with is one of the fastest ways to get there.
Sorry, I'm constantly muting myself due to traffic. People know that, though. I always like to to do that. So, all right, cool. So let's actually mix in some questions from the audience. We got some actually really good questions from Facebook, and we actually hit on this a little bit, but just in case if there's anything that you want to add, Josh Hillis, who was on the show two episodes back.
Love that guy.
Yeah, I haven't met him in person, but I'm looking forward to meeting him at some point. Josh wanted to ask, what are the biggest mistakes most trainers make when implementing habit change programs with their clients? And that was obviously a really big part of what he was doing in his book, Fat Loss Happens or Starts. It's right next to me.
Happens on Monday. Yeah. I really think it's telling clients what to do. Instead of eliciting from them what they want to do. Obviously, if we're a coach, we're the subject matter experts. We're the experts in the what, but our clients are going to be the ones who are the experts in the how. They're the ones who are integrating into their lives. And it's another great benefit of working with groups. If you've got a bunch of people all together who are trying to integrate this stuff into their daily life, you have a room full of subject matter experts. And turning it over to the group, or even just turning it over to your individual client, and letting them determine what the best path is with your guidance, is the best way to prevent yourself from making that common mistake.
Cool. And we'll just throw in another one from Jennifer Campbell, also coming from Facebook. And make sure you're always checking out, like on Twitter and Facebook, I always post when we have new guests coming up. If you want to ask questions for these guests for these episodes, definitely hit up, I think my thing is just facebook.com/KevinLarrabee or twitter.com/KevinLarrabee. And I'm always posting updates, and even twitter.com/FitCast with no the, just FitCast. And make sure you keep an eye out when I ask for questions for a guest. But anyways, Jennifer wanted to ask, how about where to start with habit change? How do you gauge a client's commitment? How do you find what really motivates them?
That's a really important question that I think we need to, it's important for coaches and trainers to be talking about. And I said this a while ago, and it seems to have caused a lot of people seem to agree with this, that people don't know what they want. Just full stop. Your clients don't know what they want. And everything, when you're in first initial session, when they're talking to you, they're more than likely telling you the stuff that they think you want to hear. In intervention, we called that going from point A, people who don't know where, they know where point A is, but they don't know what point B is. They just need to go from point A to point not A, point anywhere but here. They want change. They want success. And the best way to start working with these clients, and I've worked with people for years. It took them years to figure out where they wanted to go with this fitness journey. And that's okay, because the whole time we're making progress on the big stuff. When you start working with a client and they don't know where to go, I say don't start with what you want to do, but who you want to be. Think of the person that you want to be at the end of this health and fitness journey. Think of the qualities that that person has and that the things that that person does every single day. Do you want to be a disciplined person? What does that mean? Does that mean that you get up every day and you go and work out? Does it mean that you're hitting your macros? Whatever that means to you, make a list of who you want to be and the qualities that that person has and what they do every day. And if you're working with a client, you can take them through the same exercise. Who do you want to be? That's the place to start when you don't know where you want to go. And frankly, if you're working with general population clients, athletes know where they want to go. I'm going to put that out right. Athletes they know point B real well. But regular people, they don't know point B. And starting with who you want to be is a better place to start.
How do we do that? How do we find out where we want to go? Because you have some people that, and this is something that I think we talked a little bit about in Long Beach. But I really want to bring this up again because I thought it was super, super vital when it comes to figuring out. And maybe we can also talk about what do you do as a coach for a client, but also if I'm Kevin, if I'm just sitting at home and I'm trying to figure out, like, what do I really want? Like, we even talked about this in terms of me when I was out in Long Beach, like in terms of like fitness goals, like trying to figure out what I want. Let's start with the first part. You know, for someone that is a trainer or they're a coach, whether it's fitness or whatever, how do you investigate? How do you figure out what that client or what that person really wants, not just what they think they want, I guess?
I get there with identity, and I get there with values. So the first and most important thing is I've just let you guys peer behind the veil that most clients don't know what they want. I never tell people that. So it's important not to, you know, tell them that their goals are stupid or anything. That's very counterproductive. But listen to the things that they say and start asking them questions about it. So let's say they come to you because they want to run a marathon. Start talking to them about why they want to run the marathon. Ask them how they came upon this goal, why it's important to them, and just start asking genuinely interested questions. It's very important to remember that our job here is not to convince them not to do it. It's just to listen to why it is what they want to do. I'm going to go on a limb and say very few people actually want to run a marathon. They want to be the kind of person who ran a marathon. And getting those deeper values is I think one of the most important jobs of the coach, because it allows you to keep knowing what those are, helps you to keep that person moving forward. And so when, for example, they come upon their first running injury, which will happen, as someone who ran long distances for years will tell you, when they come across that first running injury and they start thinking, oh shit, well maybe I can't run this marathon in 4 days like I thought I was going to, if you know that person's values, if you know why they wanted to run that marathon, it's an easy pivot to keep them moving forward. It's like, well, you hurt, your knee hurts. But if I'm not mistaken, the reason you wanted to run this marathon was because you wanted to be a disciplined person. How do you think we can continue to be a disciplined person on an injury? And then you start asking them about that. And then if the answer is, well, that means being consistent. Great. There's still a lot of stuff we can do to keep moving forward and to be consistent. And over the course of doing that a number of times for a number of months, that person might end up with different goals. And that's okay. The purpose is momentum to keep them moving forward.
And how about for like if someone wants to play the game at home, and they want to figure out what they really want, I guess, what questions should they be asking themselves, or what does the process look like for someone just doing it on an individual basis?
One of my favorite exercises is just writing down the reasons why you want to do something. And I mean all of them. If you say that your goal is to get bigger arms, write down every reason that you want to do that, from the noble to the mundane, and maybe the not so noble. If just getting them out on paper is going to give you some perspective, and it might be, if it's a purely vain goal, you'll notice it pretty quickly. I like to joke that vanity doesn't last a beer. If your goals are purely vanity, you're going to forget them pretty quickly. And seeing everything written out, why you want to do this, is a great place to look a little deeper into the reasons that you're doing it. You might find something that'll last longer than a beer. It's just discovering those what we call in psychology more self-determined motivations. Things like, I want to do this because it's a part of who I am. It's called identified motivation. I want to do this because I identify with the outcomes. I want to do this because this is the type of person that I want to be and because it's fun. All of those things are all of those are reasons that'll keep you going. But you're not going to really ever know what those are unless you take the time to actually sit down and think about it.
Yeah, let's make sure. Maybe it's a case of where you can pause right now if you're at home and you're not driving and give that a shot. Write some stuff down and try to do it. It's always best to do it on paper, not on a computer. Try to write this stuff down and see what it looks like when you write it all out.
And I'll say you've got to go past five. Have to go past five. There, if you've got four reasons, you're not really thinking hard enough. Just keep going. And this exercise is called Why by Five because you need to answer it at least five times.
Another thing that I wanted to talk to you about before we go back to some of the listener questions is the concept of habit-based coaching. This is something that you've talked about in the past. What's that all about?
Habit-based coaching means, to me, putting behavior change first and putting the "but will you actually do it" question first in your training. Habit-based coaching to me means putting the client and their motivations first and picking things that are going to be sustainable and reasonable so that they'll actually get done. Habit-based coaching often takes the form of learning a habit one at a time until you've mastered the foundations is how I like to think about it. But it can be, even if it's doing sets and reps and stuff, a habit-based approach to sets and reps is looking at your entire program and going, is this reasonable? Will I actually do this? Is this a sustainable behavior?
Sorry, again, mute button always happens. So I apologize.
I always just think I dumbfound you when you don't come back quickly.
No,
like, he must be so enthralled with what I said that he hasn't come back.
It's on a 2-second time delay, and I'm so crazy about the audio quality of the podcast that I can't have like a vroom of a truck driving by. I don't like having that in the audio. So I deal with the pauses and then there's extra useless audio as well. So let's throw in some more questions from the audience. This is from Roland Fisher. Motivation seems fickle. How do we succeed when motivation is low?
Motivation is definitely fickle. I think BJ Fogg refers to motivation as waves. And I think that's a really good way to think about them. The best way to handle motivation is the way I heard a writer, I think it was Cormac McCarthy, although that sounds unlikely considering he rarely does interviews, being asked about what he does with the muse. And he said, I have a long-standing policy with the muse. I don't bother her and she doesn't bother me. The purpose of motivation is the same way. We often start out with this really hot motivation. Like we want to make a change. We want to do something. And that's a really great opportunity to start laying the foundations when motivation fails. There's a very handy model in psychology called the dual process model. In a nutshell, it means that we can do pretty much everything we do lies on a spectrum from the subconscious to the conscious. At a subconscious level, about 40% of our daily activity every day is done by habit. It's done by context cues that tell us we need to do stuff. And that's a good thing. Otherwise, driving a car would be nearly impossible if we didn't have habits. On the other side of that spectrum is intentional behavior, stuff that we set out to do, plan, and then do. And that's where motivation is. But that's also 60% of our day is consumed with motivational stuff, things that we're trying to do that are dependent on how much willpower we have. And when you have a strong moment of motivation, like I'm going to go to the fucking gym 4 times a week. I'm going to nail it. The best thing to do in that situation is not to go to the gym 8 times a week and then be completely sore and then run out of all available willpower within a couple of days. It's start laying the foundations in your environment so that when motivation is no longer there, it doesn't matter as much anymore, such as getting into the routine in the morning of going to the gym, setting the alarm, having your shoes out, being packed, ready to go, lowering the barrier to that new habit as low as possible in your so that when the motivation goes away, it seems more likely that you're going to do it. Those are just some practical examples of going to the gym. But I think Josh Hillis does a really good job of planning that stuff out in his book, Fat Loss Happens on Monday, for the nutrition side. Like, how do we make hitting nutrition as easy as possible so that when motivation goes away, we don't have to worry about it anymore? And one of my favorite quotes from Josh is, the leanest people are the people who've mastered Tupperware. Like, that's the habit of leanness, is chopping, preparing, and pre-sorting your meals. Like, that's the place to put your efforts when motivation is high, so that you, when you, when motivation fails you, you go right, you fall right back on habit.
That's really interesting. So just when you, when you are motivated, just squeeze every last bit of it and just turn it into something that is more habitual.
Yeah. The key is knowing your limits to what that is. Takes some time. I wrote a blog post a long time ago because I had reached a plateau, and I go through these all the time like anyone else. Like, it's just, there's times when I have struggled to work out, and I love working out. And this was a time when I was just not doing it very consistently. And I just had this sudden urge to do pull-ups. I mean, just like out of the blue. And I've developed this maybe foolhardy policy of, this, if I feel something very strongly, I'm going to do it, and then see why, and then figure out why later. So I just ran over to my pull-up bar that I have in my house, my iron gym, and just did a bunch of pull-ups. And it felt really freaking good. And I remembered, oh, yeah, pull-ups. I love those. And then I went back and was doing what I was doing. And it, that was the little spark. That was just that little bit of a of a sense memory that I needed to go, oh yeah, I like this stuff. And if I had said, no, I need to do a million pull-ups, that's the only way to get progress, I would have not been able to get started. Just going with what little I had and being okay with it, not beating myself up for not doing more, but just going with it, was the key to getting out of that rut. And I've worked with a lot of clients who are the same way. Let's just do what you do as much as is fun and then move on. I think actually Diane Fu tells that. She's the Olympic lifting coach at San Francisco CrossFit. And if you don't know her, you should follow on Instagram. She's great. Her policy when people ask, how many days a week should I Olympic lift? And she says, exactly as many as is fun. Do not make yourself lift any more than isn't fun. Otherwise, you're going to quit and won't do it anymore. So only do as much as fun. And I think that's really good advice when you're starting out, just to do the as much as is fun and keep remembering why it's fun. And then you'll eventually start doing more.
I'm curious. I mean, you brought up San Francisco CrossFit again and having a lot of exposure. And I think I'm one of those people out there that think CrossFit as a concept kicks ass for people that are getting coached really well, because you can see how motivating it is for the people that do it and how into it that people get. I was just wondering if you like really notice the kind of person that CrossFit draws, because it seems like a lot of people who can kind of go from not really doing any training and then jump into to CrossFit and just get really sucked in by it. I don't think it's like a cult or anything, but do you think there's
let's be honest, it's a cult.
Yeah,
but you know what? Everything else is too.
Sure,
everything else is. Anything that's that people are falling into and loving and getting really into for health and fitness is a cult. Weight Watchers is a cult. It's a fucking awesome cult. So I think that that's something that we throw around a lot when it's not our cult. But let's be realistic about what we are and what we do. We are trying to get people excited about our hobby, and some of us have chosen it as a career. But that's what we do. We get people excited, and we want them to join and see the, be excited for the same reasons that we are. And I think that's an awesome thing that CrossFit does. And I think they do it probably better than anyone. I think it might be because they're kind of unashamed of being a cult. And that's one of the coolest things that I mean, when I, two years ago, when I was like, do I want to do an internship with San Francisco CrossFit? I went out to the parking lot of Dreams, where San Francisco CrossFit was originally, and I said, I want to see how Kelly Surratt coaches. Like, I want to see this firsthand. And the first thing I noticed was, hey, this is quality freaking coaching. This is good. So I don't have to, I don't need to be on my high horse about this. Like, this is really quality stuff. And people are being safe and all that basic arguments aside. But looking at it from a habit-based coach looking at it, CrossFit and things like it, group-based stuff, is works well for a whole bunch of people precisely because it's group-based, precisely because it's about community. And good places do it well, bad places do it poorly, of course. And I will argue all day that individual CrossFits are better than HQ, and that's we can decide what that means later. But the at the end of the day, copying what they do to your own model, how you train, how you work out, might be the answer for most people. Finding a community with a set of common values and working together in order to achieve goals that are integral to those values is an awesome model. This is the same thing that Dan John does in his garage. He, every day at 9:30 in the morning, whoever shows up at his garage can work out with the group of people that's working out there. But there's, this is how we do things here is very much a part of it. You come, you join, you work out the way we work out, and this is why we do it, and this is our philosophy, and we will teach you, and we will, you will join this community. It's the same thing, and man, does it work. Intentional communities work.
Yeah, I think it's less of me pausing. I think you just end your sentences where it sounds like you're still going to be going.
Oh, you're not used to my rhythm, man. No, I'm sorry.
No, that's a really good point. And maybe it is even a, you know, more of a case for people that are training alone to start getting at least a training partner, if not, you know, jumping into a group.
Yeah, and if you don't like working out in groups, like if that part is gross to you, then just finding other people to talk about your values and your workout philosophy. And the people who share that vision might be a better way to go to find that community. Because some people are introverts. They like to work out by themselves. And that's totally cool. I'm not saying you have to work out with other people, but having other people to share your journey with is something that I think is integral.
Let's go with another question from, I think it's Lauren Koski. I'm going to see if I can rephrase this question. When previous habits fall short, when should you start adding new ones, or when should you start replacing the old habits that start failing with new ones?
Honestly, as soon as you think a habit isn't working, you should change.
Like when you recognize, like, I guess I wouldn't even know, like, when do you like start recognizing that you're out of habit? I guess it's almost like subconsciously you're going to have to recognize it.
I think I know what she means. Let's use the example of flossing. That's a good way to it's a good example for almost any habit. Like if you're trying to start the habit of flossing and you decide that you're going to floss every day after you brush your teeth, and then you look back and you realize you've only done it like 3 times in the last week. As soon as you lose confidence that a habit is working, it probably is going to start working. I think confidence is probably the most important factor in a habit. But it doesn't mean you need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know that the action of flossing is good. Maybe it's the trigger. Maybe it's the way that you've decided to integrate it into your life that's not working. Habits need triggers. We have to be triggered by an external or internal cue, and if we want it to be completely on autopilot. So a great way to change that up with flossing would be to floss before you brush your teeth instead of after, which is actually a recommendation I make for a lot of people. When you put it in front of the thing that you need to do, the trigger is, oh, I need to brush my teeth. I brush my teeth every morning. It's really not hard to do because it's habit now. But if you don't brush your teeth until you floss, you sort of have inserted it in the middle, and it might work better than before. So that's as soon as you realize that a habit isn't working, like writing down what you eat isn't working, stop, think about the trigger, think about how what's reminding you to do this habit, and see if you can find a better one first. So it might not be the habit, you know, the action that's broken. It's probably the trigger, and you need to find a different trigger for it.
What do you think is, I mean, this is another thing that you talked about before, but you know, what are the biggest mistakes you think that people are making when they're trying to motivate themselves?
I think the biggest mistake when you're trying to motivate yourself is beating yourself up. Nothing starts easy. And I think the most important meta habit, like habit that helps habits, that you can get into is forgiving yourself. And I wrote a whole article I write a weekly column for My Fitness Pal, and one of the ones that was most popular, in fact, I think it was the most popular that I've ever written, was the two most important words that you can say to master any habit. And it's the two most important words are, it's okay. You need to try something, see if it's working, and if it's not, say, it's okay, keep moving forward. There's always another way. You can always keep moving forward. Failures are not the end of a journey to success. They're a part of the journey to success. And the obstacles are the path. Like, just saying it's okay might be the most important thing that you tell yourself when you're on any fitness journey. And not beating yourself up is key. And just, I honestly have clients who practice saying that in the mirror. They just never said it to themselves. It's okay. And it's okay to do 5 sets instead of 6 sets. It's okay to get 4 workouts in a week instead of 5. It's okay to hit your macros 6 days a week instead of 7. It's also okay to hit it 1 day instead of 7. It's okay. As long as the next day, the next week you hit 2. You just have to keep moving forward and forgive yourself if you're not doing it as fast as you want to go.
As we wrap things up, I know we've talked about a lot of stuff today, but you guys have like a really cool summit coming up for people that really want to get, you know, in depth look at all this stuff. And this is just not only for like trainers out there, or even just not people just in the fitness industry, but really for anyone that wants to really understand this stuff. So what is it that you have coming up, and where can people check it out?
This is a continuation of something really awesome that we tried in Salt Lake City in September. It's called the Motivate Summit. And we're doing the next one in New York City on February 21st. It'll be at Mark Fisher Fitness. It's limited to 50 people because we have a small room. So if you're interested in everything that I say, maybe you should just open that website now. It's habitry.com, habitry.com/summit. And the Motivate Summit is a little different from most other conferences. In fact, it's called an unconference. There are no gurus talking at beginners. The content is created by the people who show up. And we have tried this last fall in Salt Lake City, and it was such a huge success. We're actually doing 3 this year. New York is the first one. We're doing another one in Oakland in June, and another one in Salt Lake City in September, because this has just been such a cool thing. People show up, and we give them the time and space to speak. There's a grid of available times and spaces. And if you want to talk about anything that has to do with that other 167 hours that we're not with our clients, behavior change, motivation, habits, how to talk to clients, if you're a client, how you like to be talked to. We actually had non-fitness professionals there. We had technologists, psychologists, physical therapists. It runs the gamut. Anyone with the passion to show up who is interested in this topic, how do we help people in the other 167 hours that they're not with us? And the community of people that has sprung up around this problem is perhaps the coolest thing I've ever seen in my career. And we're all going to be there talking about this stuff and showing what we've learned in the last 6 months. A lot of people are coming back to this one. They're flying all the way back across the country to do the New York one. And we're going to be talking about the things we've tried that have worked. And we're going to be opening the floor to new suggestions, man. The experts in behavior change are coaches. And as much as I've learned academically, I've learned practically from people like Dan and from the awesome coaches like Josh Hillis. And the people with the passion to show up to this event are the ones who are going to revolutionize this industry. We're going to revolutionize the way we actually work with clients. And it's one of the coolest things I've ever been able to do.
Yeah, for people out there, I think it's definitely something that is of high value. You should definitely check it out. And if you're in the area, even more so, you really have no excuse to not go check it out. So what's the URL one more time for people that want to give it a look? I'll have it in the show notes too, but just for people if you're listening right now.
Well, I think the easiest one to remember would be motivatesum.it. http://motivatesum.it. That spells Motivate Summit if you're fancy. You can also go to habitree.com/summit. Habitree is my website where those of us who were inspired by this problem of the other 167 hours get together and write about motivation and willpower and how to talk to clients and all that fun stuff. And if you go to that website, you can click on, if you go to habitree.com, you can click on Motivate Summit and learn all about how we do what we do and how cool this summit really is.
Awesome. And, as we start wrapping up, I'm just going to take this time to, again, thank you to everyone that is supporting the FitCast, whether it's through Patreon or through PayPal. You guys can never understand how important that stuff is to make sure that these episodes still get made on a weekly basis. That is a huge help. And if you enjoy the show, you can also subscribe on iTunes. You can submit reviews on there. It's always good to be a little bit higher than Jillian Michaels' podcast so we can get some better information out there on a weekly basis. And
she has a podcast?
I think it's not even her that runs it. It's,
oh, good, because I was like, I just imagined someone screaming
I think
for
it's
60
her,
minutes.
It's like her assistant, I think, that runs it. But anyways, that's all great stuff. Of course, thefitcast.com, and definitely make sure you check out the show notes. You can get links for all the stuff that we mentioned in the show today. And other than that, Steve-O, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and talk about this awesome stuff. I'm sure everyone out there, this might be one of those episodes that you get a, stop, finish, digest, then re-listen again and maybe take some notes, because there is some really important stuff in there. And I think that is kind of how the fitness industry is going to be going in the next couple of years, because as I mentioned before, I kind of know that I should be doing three sets of six and supersets and all that stuff. I need to know how to make sure that people actually do what they're supposed to be doing.
Totally.
Yeah, Steve-O, thank you so much for taking the time, man. It's been a huge pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much for having me.
For having fun, I'm gonna party hard until the sun comes up. The music feels so good. Dancing is what I love.